B-Pod Studios.
Your smart speaker knows a lot about Boston sports.
Stupid me.
Just say, play 98.5 The Sports Hub. For the latest podcasts, the latest sports news, and for Tutcher and Rich, download the 98.5 The Sports Hub app now.
It's fired, and Krejci's drive, stick to side, out in front, Marchand shoots, he scores! The Bruins throw a pass to the bottom of the right wing circle, and Marchand had time to look, picked his spot, and whipped it inside the far post, a power play goal! Bruins 1, Devils nothing.
98.5, The Sports Hub, but we are Tutcher and Rich, and Bruce Cassidy, head coach of the red-hot Boston Bruins. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Mr. Cassidy, hello. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, gentlemen. How are we?
We are doing well. So, Carolina Hurricanes, they are known for being silly gooses after games and and doing stupid-ass things like playing ring around the rosy.
I actually have no problem with that.
You would not disagree.
I just think it's
what they're being little silly gooses.
It breaks into monotony, I guess.
If you find the game monotonous, then please. All right, but Mr. Cassidy, what do you feel about the post-game celebrations from the Carolina Hurricanes?
I'm not a huge fan, but I get it. They're in a market where they're a little tougher to draw fans, so I it keeps them around. So I think most teams are long gone by then. They're in the dressing room, so they don't even see it. So not a big deal. I don't know if they'll do it in the playoffs. That'll be interesting, but we'll see. Let's take it in.
If you saw one of your own players try to pull something like that off, would you have a word with them?
I think our leaders would, to be honest with you, they'd recommend they don't. There's celebrations now in the game. That's where it's changed a lot. I think you used to score a goal, you'd go hug the teammate to pass you the puck or something like that. Now you jump into the glass, you see that. I don't know if that started with the Washington Capitals there years ago or some guys take off a football, wide receivers that started that. I don't know, but that's enough for me. I'm a little old school that way. I think you should go to your teammates first, personally.
That's right, and then beat the crap out of whoever's in the way. All right.
That's right.
All right, so Pasternak's injured, and we'll get to the timeline maybe on him. But when you first heard about how he got injured and he was coming out of a restaurant with teammates and he fell, were you pissed off?
No, I mean, I found out the next morning, and it happened at night, so the first thing you're wondering, what did these guys up to last night? And then we found out, it was just one of those things, an accident, and happens, and there's other teammates with him. Some of the, I think it was a sponsor's dinner that he's involved with, so we were just hoping it wouldn't be long at the end of the day, how serious was it? So it took a few days to sort through that, but it looks like he's going to rejoin us here down the road, so that's good news.
Now, when obviously a guy like that goes down, your leading scorer, there's part of you that's just like, oh boy, here we go, we're going to have to try to make this work. Are even you shocked at the results that you've gotten since he has been away?
Yeah, we had trouble scoring before consistently. We'd have our nights, and other nights it was a struggle, but it came together at the right time. I think our guys recognize that someone has to pick up the slack, particularly DeBrusk. He got hot at the right time. Our defense started scoring, McAvoy in particular. Fourth line pitched in, so all of a sudden you're able to overcome it. So it speaks a lot about our guys. They knew we had to find it elsewhere, and they have so far. He'll only help us when he gets back because everyone loves Pasta. It's not like they're going to be upset that he's going to get his minutes back. But at the end of the day, it's made us a better team right now, a stronger team, and hopefully going forward.
So when he comes back, which line do you intend putting him on? Back on next to Krejci and DeBrusk, or will he be back on the first line? Because I don't know when someone comes back from an injury whether there's like a certain like pairing that you like, or I don't know how that would work. But where do you imagine him being once he returns?
I think it depends a little on the timeline. If there's time before the end of the year, probably with Krejci, because we never got a real good look at that, and that would move Johansson down with Coyle, which we'd be interested in seeing. If it's right at the going into the playoffs, if there's something that lingers there, it might have to be with Marsh and Bergie because that's where he's had his most success. He's going to be a little behind. I don't care how much time you miss. You're going to be a little bit behind, so I think it'd be easier for him to catch up. He has more familiarity with them. So some of it will have to do with how many games we have left when he gets back in.
All right, so he's going to have to wear something on his hand, everyone's saying. Is that, in your experience, how difficult is that to adjust to?
I think there'll be an adjustment because he's a handsy guy. He trusts his hands a lot, strong on a stick, a lot of one-on-one hockey. So I assume, there'll be gripping issues at first. Does that affect his one time or his shot? I don't know. He will have some time to work on it. Listen, it's not going to help it, I can't believe, right? So if anything, it might hinder it a little bit. But guys get used to stuff after a while. So like I said, as long as he has a few games to get back into the swing of thing with all that, I think he'll be fine. So hopefully he gets good news from his next doctor's appointment and has a little time to sort it out.
Just one last thing on Pastrnak. You said that you understood he was coming out of a sponsored dinner. What was his reaction to the team and to you when it came out that he was going to be injured and out for a while?
Well, he talked to Donnie first, and I think he was, what I was told, he was close to tears. I mean, he feels he let the team down to a certain extent because it wasn't an on-ice injury. But listen, the guys love – Pasta comes to the rink every day in a good mood. He's a hard worker. He's a team-first guy. So I don't think there's any resentment at all. He just felt bad he's letting the team down at a tough time going into the deadline. The team was – we're not on the roll we're on now, so – we weren't scoring as much. You figured we'd lose that part of the game. But, at the end of the day, we've been able to pick up the slack for him. So I think he feels a lot better now that we've, been able to win some games without him and keep the ship kind of in control here.
We're talking to Bruce Cassidy, head coach, obviously, of the Bruins. Now, yesterday you talked about Tuukka Rask and the plans with Halak. And I find it interesting. I mean, you're estimating, obviously. You don't have to tell me that. But Halak, you said you'd split it 10-7. And I know Halak has played well. It surprised me, though, in saying that, how important is it to have home ice in the first round to you? And if things continue to be this close, would you play Rask maybe a little bit more?
It's very important, I think, to have home ice. It's not the be-all, end-all, but we saw last year, Game 7 is a big advantage. I think early in the series, teams can easily, win, steal a game on the road and get one back. But it's Game 7, I think, where you really want it. We're comfortable with Jarl. I mean, his numbers are very similar to Tuukka's. He had a little bit of a hiccup there. I think it was January for a couple of weeks. Pucks were getting through him. He sorted that out. So I think we're comfortable with both. Would we adjust it and go with the hotter hand at the end if need be? Absolutely. But we've kind of had a plan all year, and it's worked out for Tuukka well and Jarl, obviously. So we want to kind of stick with it. So it'll be close to a 10-7 type of split. Would we veer off one way or another for the gamer? I wouldn't say 2 or 3, though. We're not going to run him right into the playoffs. Because I think his game is fine as it is now. And unless we have a conversation, that's what he wants. But right now, I think he's comfortable with his workload. He's feeling good about his game, but also his kind of fatigue or fitness level.
Bruce, there's been a lot of talk about the makeup of this team and how they're a fun team to watch because as of late, they've, on both ends of the ice, they've been playing hard. And I think one of the prime examples was Noah Chari, who I believe you were asked about it, where his face essentially exploded when the puck hit him in the mouth. I mean, both lips were split. He had several teeth knocked out and jostled. And so you had just written him off for the next game, correct? And did he come to you at that point and say, no, I'm playing?
Yeah, we actually spoke to the medical staff and the dentist. Said, listen, he's probably going to be in the chair for 4 or 5 hours, so don't count on him tomorrow because there'll be some residual, obviously, pain, in his mouth, and he's going to have headaches and so we thought, okay, maybe the next game we'll get him back in there. We knew he's a tough guy, but he got a break because some of the damage they thought he could fix, they couldn't. It was worse. So we're just going to write those teeth off. and then, we'll push a few around and all of a sudden stitch up the inside. And the next day he came in and I asked him, I said, you're still a little goofy from the pain meds. Said, nope, not at all. I took some in the afternoon, nothing at night. I want to get in there. So that was that. Been a good part of our team, a little bit underappreciated. His numbers don't jump off the page, but he's done a real good job playing against the other teams. Good players every night. He's physical. He sets the tone. Teammates love him.
Is he still going to wear that big-ass Spaceballs helmet?
Do you think he's a pussy for wearing a full face mask?
No. We've had a few guys wear it. It seems to bring good luck to them, to tell you the truth. Corrali had it on, and he was flying around and went to start at the Winter Classic. So maybe Wagner's next. He's the only one on the line that hasn't happened. He throws his face in front of a puck tonight. You'll know why, because he wants that thing. But
maybe in practice, everyone just kind of aims the wrong way a little bit.
Right. It's like you take it, so you only have to take it once, and then for the rest of it. I was just thinking about Cassidy there on the bench going, all right, you scored there at Charlie with your pussy-ass face mask on. So that's what I thought. All right, so the trade deadline has come and gone, and, you got the two pieces you got, and obviously everyone noticed or knew that you needed a third-line center. During that day, How tuned in were you with the conversation Sweeney was having?
He was upstairs. We were in the office downstairs. He'd come down every, let's say, 45 minutes, half an hour, kind of update us on what was going on. I think there was a few different deals in the works that, you know, could have happened. It was fairly typical, I think, when teams know you're looking. Maybe the ask was too much or another team had, whatever, a better offer. But at the end of the day, you know, both of those conversations came up about both players we did acquire, how they'd fit in. And he went ahead and made it, and I'm happy he did. I think, you know, everybody wants the big fish, right, the biggest fish, but I think there was a lot of teams in on that stone, and then Vegas offered him that, you know, the max deal, and off he went. He was probably the biggest guy out there. Could have helped any team in the league. But we got two good guys that fit in well for us, are fitting in well for us in areas of need. So I thought he did a great job and not giving up too much down the road, what he thought would help us in the future, but dealing with stuff that helps us today, and we'll see how it works out.
Yeah, because if you look at what the possibilities were, you mentioned Stone, and then you talk about Nyquist, and he didn't want to come to the Bruins and all that. It seemed like, in terms of those bigger names, that Sweeney didn't have much wiggle room. But was there a point that day where you thought, oh, wow, there's a chance I might get this guy? And not saying you were disappointed or anything, but it didn't end up coming to fruition.
Not really. Those big names, I think, were, you know, probably, I don't know, you have to talk to Donnie at the end of the day. He never came to me and said, oh, we're real close on this guy or that. He's pretty good that way. It's like, what do you think if, you know, we go this route? And it ended up being Johansson at the end. Coyle was, I think, the day before, or a couple days before. That one was, I don't know if he's had discussions with Minnesota earlier because they were moving a lot of guys. It's usually a new GM. I had no idea, but that one happened a little bit earlier and an area of need, certainly. We tried different young guys. I thought they did okay at times, but not quite Charlie's pedigree and something we needed to fill, so happy he got it done.
As a player, Bruce, that's got to be a nightmare of a day, knowing that you could at any moment get traded. And with social media, it's got to be 10 times worse. Do you talk to your players, or do you keep them busy that day in order to try to keep their heads focused and not on, you know, the dread of what could happen with an impending trade?
Yeah, I don't talk to them. I think there's enough guys in the room that have been through it. The veteran guys will, you know, talk to the few younger guys. I think in our situation, we were looking to add, and usually that means, you know, prospects and picks, right? So you don't want to take off your own roster very often. It happens periodically, but so our guys are a little bit at ease there. I'd imagine it'd be more difficult if you were a team that was a little bit on the outs looking in, like the Rangers. I'm sure one of their veteran guys was probably wondering, where am I going? And I don't think there was any a big issue with us moving anybody off our roster. But like I said, only the players can answer that. At the end of the day, we try not to bring up any more than what's already out there.
Well, Bruce, unfortunate news yesterday. Kevin Miller, he was downgraded to week to week. What do you know about his status and what was happening there?
Well, he had an upper body injury that he played through it for a game, and then it got a little bit worse, so we thought he was fine. I think the original x-ray didn't show anything, and then an MRI did. So he's week to week now. We'll see him here at some point down the road, but we thought it'd be a day-to-day thing. We'd only miss a few games. It looks like it's going to extend. And it's been a tough year for Kevin that way. He's had a few injuries that, you know, they got the puck in the throat there that we didn't think was much. All of a sudden finds out it's a little more than it is. And got to be very, you know, cautious with that one. So been a tough year for him in that regard. But he'll hang in there. He'll be back. And we've got some depth in the blue line. We're lucky there. John Moore stepped right in and done a good job for us. Stephen Kampfer's played well for us. So we're covered there, but we do miss him. He's a tough guy and a good team guy and a good hockey player.
And Char, at his age, had interesting comments that he didn't want to rest on the way out into the playoffs, that's hurt him before. Are you going to abide by his wishes?
Well, he's 6'9 and 250 pounds, so probably.
Yeah. I was just going to ask you, when he fought Kane, is there a part of you, because I know they're not your kids, and he's probably around your age, but is there a point where someone picks a fight with Chara and he drops his gloves where you get like a warm feeling of like, he's really going to kick the crap out of this guy?
Yeah, well, it happened in a hurry. And all of a sudden, he was down. It was like, you know, you sort of take your eye off the play and go elsewhere, but all of a sudden he recovered, and good for him. I mean, you got to give the guy credit for trying to tangle with Z. I mean, that's, you got to have a lot of, you know, gumption to do that, or courage, whatever word you want to use. But at the end of the day,
I found out how hard it was for you to gather a word other than balls.
Yeah, I guess I was worried about earlier. I was like, I'm going to be
radio here. That's right. We get two dumps. So you're allowed one more. We have two.
Oh, we're plenty past that last dump. We're fine.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, it's good for Z, but we will listen. If he needs a rest, we'll give it to him. I think he just doesn't like to. He's a competitor. He wants to play every night. But if there's a back-to-back situation late in the year, he might do it with a few guys just to keep the other guys fresh and to give him a break. But at the end of the day, like I said, he wants out there to try to manage his minutes, but he's used to it. He's a guy that's his fitness level through the roof. So it's not going to, I don't think it's going to bother him a lot. It might be the wear and tear of travel if there's some of that involved, or early game time following a later one that maybe he's not fully recovered. But other than that, he's played most of the games, or probably all of them, to be honest with you, unless we see the need.
All right. Well, Bruce Cassidy, congratulations on everything, and here's to continued success. And I need 8 tickets for the last game of the season. I'll pay for them. But just keep that in mind, all right?
How about Thursday? My family comes. I got young kids.
I have young kids, too, and I need these tickets. Cause...
Oh, there you go. We're in the same boat. All right. We'll just see what we can do.
All right. Thanks, Bruce. We appreciate it.
See you, man.
Toucher and Rich are back on TV.
I really didn't know that.
Twitch.tv. Follow the Sports Hub. Watch and react with 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Cat.
Good, you're here.
What?
Bruno called me. He told me not to let you go downtown to Marchette's. Something's up.
Tony, I let you go down there, man.
What the hell?
Five Sports Sub, we're Toucher and Rich. Dylan McKay, otherwise known as...
Luke
Perry.
Yes.
Has died. And by all accounts, he was a very nice man. Apparently, he was in first class, and there was two young brothers fighting in the back of the plane. And Colin Hanks was on the plane, and out of first class came Luke Perry, and he had balloons, and he shut the kids up. And from all accounts, I'm not being sarcastic, from all accounts, he was a very a decent man. Now, he has shocked us all with his knowledge of 90210. Now, I have seen every episode of 90210. In fact, I'll ask you a personal question. What episode was a guy I went to high school with in?
Ooh.
We've talked about this several times. This is a blight on our relationship, if you don't know.
Guy you went to high school with?
Yes, he did not have a line, but he was in a seminal episode.
I don't know that one.
Steve Sanders was, he was...
Is this the ping pong ball one?
Yes.
That one? It's the ping pong ball one where they're trying to blackball Sanders.
You got
and
that
Paul
right.
Sears, and Sears has everyone convinced.
Right.
And everyone drops the ping pong balls in for Sears, and then the head of the keg house speaks up for Steve, and then the ping pong balls go the other way.
Now,
and Sanders is in, and Sears is out.
Yeah, and
that's
what,
the one. He was one of the fraternity brothers in the room
right.
while the ping pong ball episode.
But he was like, once Steve Sanders had been vindicated. Now, what clownish big man was involved in that whole...
Munts? You're talking about Munts?
I'm talking about Munts.
Yeah,
Munts.
Yeah.
I am talking about Munts.
He was always in some hijinks, that Munts.
Okay, I'm going to ask you some questions about 90210.
This is to not celebrate, but in honor of Luke Perry's passing.
Yeah, so Luke Perry, and I mean, he's 52 years old when he died, and he was representative of at least... John, he was... Well, you're 52, right?
51.
All right, so he's representative of a lot of... I was in the same grade as 902 when they were moving on.
Right.
So I think this is why it's such a big deal for people. All right, I'm going to ask you easy ones. I'll tell you the ones I know that you should just be able to flip off the top of your head.
Okay.
All right, Andrea had a crush on whom?
Andrea had a crush on Brandon.
Where did the family move from?
Brandon moved from Minneapolis.
That's right. Jones, you can of course
feel free to jump in, Jones.
Oh, I didn't want to ruin what you were doing.
Well, these are the easy ones.
No, yeah. the easy ones I might have a chance.
All right. Where did Brenda go the summer Dylan cheated with Kelly?
Paris.
Yeah, that's right. Ooh. She went to Paris.
Ooh.
And what actor who has since fallen from grace, Yale football player, did Brenda cheat?
That was Dean Cain, but he went to Princeton.
That's right. And okay, went to Princeton. I'm sorry. And who was in Paris with Brenda?
Donna.
All right, there you go.
See, he's quick.
Okay.
Well, as I said, these he's asked.
These are the easy ones of before.
All right,
now the tough ones.
David's best friend early in the series.
That's Scott.
Scott whom?
Wow. He killed himself. I remember.
Of course, he wore a cowboy hat.
He wore a cowboy hat. He went to Oklahoma for the summer.
The best thing about
came
that.
Back with a bunch of guns, and yeah. No one thought that was weird.
No, they did a thing. They did a thing to promote it.
Scanlon, thank you.
There you go, Scott Scanlon. Yeah. And wow. So they were like, "Hey, someone on 90210 is going to die."
Right.
And they flash through everyone, and then Scott Scanlon comes up. And you're like, I'm imagining it's the guy who hasn't been on the show in 3 months.
Yeah, he kind of disappeared and then came back wearing a cowboy hat and was even more of an outcast than he was when he left. But he thought the guns would make him cool.
Yeah.
And so he's out. Let me show you how you work this. And he's like twirling it around in his bedroom. Oh, that's good.
Scott, come on. They found some. Hey, David, check this out. Scott.
I don't like the sound of this.
Scott, put that.
And he survived.
Yeah, David. Yeah, David was kind of torn up by that.
Is that why David turned to speed?
No, that was later. Okay. That was in college.
All right,
no,
well,
no.
Just ask you this. Why did David turn to speed, John?
Apparently, he had trouble studying. I remember.
But he was doing a side
meth.
Gig.
It was meth.
Yes, and he was doing a side gig.
It was a DJ overnight.
He was doing it from the Peach Pit.
Yeah.
And who was his partner?
Oh, it was Donna at the start.
That's right. They were an emotional team. And he couldn't stay up. He had too many irons in the fire.
Yes.
He had to be. What song did he play, John, that would no college radio DJ would play in a million years? It was
what
a one-hit
song?
It was a one-hit wonder.
Is that Right Kind of Love, Jeremy Jordan?
That is Right Kind of Love by Jeremy Jordan.
Yeah.
All right.
There's an iconic scene where Donna walks up to the Peach Pit jukebox and looks at all the selections and goes, Jeremy Jordan, all right.
Yeah, Jeremy Jordan, a honk, and he was out there on the basketball
right
court.
Right Kind of Love.
Yep. He had a sweatshirt that he cut off.
Oh, God.
Okay. Easy. How did Ray Pruitt hurt Donna?
Push her down some stairs.
That is absolutely
in
true.
Palm Springs at a convention for the Alpha House.
Yes, but they were not in a very nice place. They were outdoor stairs, which is not.
Yeah, no, that was good. And Valerie Malone apparently saw this.
Why are you so mad at me?
Because you make me mad.
You know what? I have to go work on my speech.
No.
Oh, you're hurting me.
You're gonna listen to me. Donna.
You know what's odd is Donna got the role due to her father, but her father left her no money in his
trail. That's right. Big, big problem after that. And then she had to, do this reality show with
yes,
her husband.
Her husband is a big Canadian star.
No, wasn't good.
Where does Brenda move after season 4, John?
She goes to London. She becomes an actress, oddly enough, in a Shakespearean company and moves to London and does not return.
That
opens up a slot for Tiffany Ann Mertheson to move into the Walsh House.
And easy, where did Valerie come from?
Buffalo.
Okay, and who, this is off the top of my head, who was originally interested in Valerie?
Oh, Steve, right at the start.
Absolutely.
And she, the trick was, now, if you really want to get into this, the trick was she came in and wanted to project a certain image, so she started dating Steve. But in reality, she was sleeping with Dylan,
right,
who had just lost all of his money.
Right.
And so she would, date Steve during the day, and then the Walshers, she'd leave the house. Walshers didn't know where she went. She'd go over to Dylan, but she hooked Dylan in by showing up at a pool hall where Dylan was shooting a little stick.
He was shooting a little stick because
trips
he was
down to Mexico.
Right.
Yeah,
lost all his money, went to Mexico, got drunk. Right.
Yeah. Okay, I'll ask you this. Is that what would be, and this is a question that there's no factual answer for.
Okay.
But what would be an advantage of dating Steve during the day?
Ooh. Well, you make yourself look in a certain light. He's also got a lot of money.
And what would you be able to do during the day with Steve? What did he have that would be cool?
A nice car.
Which was what?
It was a Vette.
Yes, indeed.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, when he was in high school, he drove the Vette. And he said, well, there are only two choices if you're going to drive a car. There's a Vette, and then there's a Vette. And then he went for the hot girl in school when, you know, he and Brandon were sophomores. And the girl went up and said, I don't do Corvettes. I only do Porsches.
Yeah,
and
well,
it cut Steve to the bone, man. It wasn't a lot of fun for him.
Yeah. Okay, so Steve got in a bit of trouble in high school. This is off the top of my head. What did Steve do?
Well, Steve, you know, entered the computer, you know, broke into the school. Well, he had a legacy key, Fred. That's the thing. He had a legacy key that was passed on from senior to senior and got this legacy key, broke into school after hours, and convinced a sophomore, whose name escapes me right now, a nerd, to help him break into the computer bank and get his grades changed.
Yes.
And then a janitor saw him do this.
And then he blackmailed him
for a while. And then Steve went to the nerd and said, why don't you throw yourself on the grenade for this? I'm a senior. You're a sophomore. You can handle this problem. You'll be fine. And the sophomore said, you're an ass. There's no way I'm taking the blame for this. And Steve finally fessed up to it.
All right, John. Steve and his father had a difficult relationship, to say the least. But they bonded over
golf.
Against whom?
Barry and Bobby Bonds. They played. Barry and Bobby Bonds in a club tournament.
Yes,
and there was a problem because Rush, his father, would hit the ball a long way and say, "You know, you're dead. You're hitting the ball way farther than you used to. Are you cheating?" And Rush said, "Well, no, I'm not cheating." And then finally, on the front nine, Rush admits that he had put the golf balls in the freezer overnight to give himself a little extra distance.
Oh boy!
And Steve said, "Look, if we're going to play, we're playing it straight. Either you play it straight, or I'm walking right off this course right now," and Rush played it straight.
Well, I'll tell
you what. The problem was, Fred, that the Bonds guys were good year after year, and Rush had never beaten them.
Right.
So he cheated to give himself this opportunity. Never won the club championship, Barry and Bobby.
And then who sinks the putt to win the championship?
Steve, of course.
Absolutely, he does. There's nothing like freezing the balls and then putting them in the California sun.
That's right.
To really get an advantage.
Well, I mean, there are plot holes in every sitcom. In every drama, Fred.
Right? Well,
you got to suspend disbelief in this case.
All right, that is okay. Andrea and Jesse's daughter named. One of the worst storylines in the history
of
90210.
Hannah.
It is Hannah.
Yeah. Hannah. She was born prematurely. Almost died. Spent a lot of time in the hospital. Yep. And there was a lot of time, too.
Do you think that at a point Andrea wished that she died?
What's that?
Do you think there was any point where Andrea, with all her goals in going to Yale, do you think there was ever a time where she was conflicted on the health of her daughter?
Oh, never, Fred. Never.
Okay.
Never. Never.
All right.
But the problem was it was a religious problem because Jesse is Catholic and Andrea is Jewish, and there was a conflict between the two of them how to raise their daughter.
All right, John. Kelly was in a very perilous situation. Can you tell me what that was?
Well, there were a bunch of them, Fred. I would say the drugs was a major problem.
No, but a perilous situation beyond her control. Something happened. She was stuck in something.
Oh, she was stuck in a fraternity party and was burned badly. Fire.
Yes, okay.
The problem, though, with that, though, Fred.
She wasn't burned that badly, though.
Yeah, she was. She was burned pretty badly.
She was burned pretty badly. But
the problem was, though, Brandon was not there.
Not as badly.
Brandon was supposed to be there, but was not there because he was on a date with Emily Valentine, who was back in town.
Yeah, that came out of nowhere.
Yeah, and that was a problem because Kelly thought that Brandon was then staying with her out of pity, when in reality he really loved Emily, but Emily showed up at the beach house and said, that's not true. He's in love with you.
And then he had to go to San Francisco to get that going. Who was with Kelly in that fire, John?
I forget the name of the character, but it was a woman who fell in love with Kelly. That was a big problem.
Absolutely.
So she was burned even worse than Kelly was.
Yes.
Asked Kelly to get back with, you know, come visit her. But while she was laid up in bed, she realized that she loved Kelly.
Okay. Only a couple more. What is the name of the guy who introduced Kelly to cocaine?
Colin. Ooh. Colin Roberts.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And she came back. She came back with him. She fell in love with him when she was in New York.
Is he the painter?
And no. Colin was an artist in New York.
Okay, this is impossible. But what?
Okay.
What?
If I don't get it, I'm an idiot. If I get it, I'm a real idiot.
No. Okay. This is impossible.
Okay.
What sparked Kelly's cocaine use with Colin? What event in her life?
her father stood her up.
Oh, my God, John.
Father stood her up for a meeting. And her father was in and out. You know, she always wanted the approval from her dad. And then ultimately,
like Steph Curry.
Yeah, exactly. Just like that. She always wanted the approval from her father. And she had a big dinner set up with her dad. And her dad just didn't show up.
All right. I'm not even using these questions. So, all right. What did Tara do to Valerie?
Who?
Tara, apparently.
Tara was her girlfriend from Buffalo who figured out that Valerie had faked a pregnancy, I believe. And she said, you let me have David, who she was dating David Silver at the time. You let me have David for a night.
This is the redhead? Tara?
I believe that's the case. She came to visit, but she was a con artist just like Valerie. And she said, you let me have your boyfriend David Silver for a night or I'll tell everyone everything.
Dad hit it.
All right. There is one last question via the phone. Brian, go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, John, you were mentioning about what Steve's car was. Do you remember what his license plate was?
Wow. White fro?
No, I don't know. I don't know that one.
Okay. It was I8A4RE.
I ate a Ferrari.
Oh.
Ah.
I know that. No,
very
no.
good.
Very well
and,
done.
And finally, let me, where was the group coming from when Kelly got shot?
Hawaii.
Jesus, John.
It's the right.
Oh, God. You suck.
It's the right kind of night. You're the right kind of girl.
This got played on a college station.
This video with him standing on a basketball court shirtless.
He's shirtless at times, and then he's got like a cut off.
He's like throws a basketball off screen for some reason. It's the weirdest.
Not
thing.
A lot happening. Well, listen, John.
Very impressive.
Thank you.
Did
when you
said, feel? Did you
when
feel
you said photographic memory? I didn't realize that's what we were talking about.
Did you feel sad when Luke Perry died?
No.
Really?
I found the whole thing very, very strange because, you know, Good Morning America did it. They're talking about him like he's a master thespian.
Well, no, no, no.
And won a bunch of Academy Awards. It's very weird how this whole thing's been covered.
In all seriousness, I think he represented youth to a lot of people, and his death.
That's true.
Yes.
I can see that.
I think that's what the deal is. Well, John, I told you before this, it was going to fail if you were not involved. But you never disappoint with 90210 Trivia. We will be right back. Here are the headlines.
Someone very special I want you guys to meet.
Toucher and Rich.
I just want to tell you both good luck.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Curry, bad pass, misses Draymond Green. Another steal for Hayward. Marcus Smart returns to Gordon Hayward and lays it in. And the Boston Celtics, who have played better in this building than anybody else in the NBA, have built a 20-point first half lead. 64-44.
We're playing a team tomorrow that's young, hungry, and has played tremendous all year, plays with great speed. If we don't play like we did tonight from a purpose standpoint, we won't have a chance to win. It's the way the NBA is. You got to outplay the person across from you, and it's really hard.
98.5, the Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich. That is the Celtics. They 33-point victory last night against the Golden State Warriors. Kyrie Irving talked to the media before the game. He goes, I get tired of all the criticism stuff like everyone else. It's a constant battle because media has just gotten outrageous. Oh, yeah, they just recently. You know what I mean? I just saw something the other day where he's the greatest player playing in our game right now. But just see somebody question LeBron's James' body of work, like my body of work, which I find interesting that he's comparing himself to LeBron James.
It's the same.
And also, LeBron James, I think, deserves a little criticism this year because he's on a team that might not make the playoffs. Like my body of work, Kevin Durant's body of work, the team success falls on the best players. And whether to call it fair or unfair, nobody should ever question what type of winner these guys are. Why? What type of winner I am? Or whether or not I have a team-first mentality? Nobody wants it to be solely about them. But star players take most of the responsibility, and so does the head coach. So when you have that and you have a relationship, you have to build with that. again, I don't understand what Kyrie Irving's problem is, other than the team's not playing well, regardless of last night. And we talked about this yesterday, John, and Adam, if you didn't hear it, which you probably didn't because you sleep like a normal human being, is that, like, what does he want? He's on a team that should be in the hunt for a championship on a fairly regular basis with an opportunity to improve. He's going to make as much money as he could possibly make, and he's the leader of the team. So, and by the way, where you play has no influence on, he can make movies, which is very funny because the other day he said he didn't like the cameras on him.
Yeah.
He was wearing an Uncle Drew hat, and apparently he's making a movie
this summer. Did it back-to-back days.
Yeah.
Where he wore the Uncle Drew hat during the post-game press conference.
I'm wondering what he thinks people are going to do with Uncle Drew now. But, I mean, it made money. But does anyone have an opinion of what he wants?
Yeah. He wants what LeBron always wants, which is he wants media coverage, and he enjoys the media when there's no pushback and no criticism. So what he doesn't like is the... It's not that he doesn't like media all of a sudden. It's that he doesn't like that he has to hear the truth about how he's playing and how he acts and how the team's playing. So that's what he doesn't like. It's LeBron 101. LeBron loves the media until they're critical. LeBron loves people kissing his ass and telling him how great he is and how he's right there neck and neck with Michael Jordan. LeBron will eat that up all day long. What he doesn't like is when the team's not playing well, or, you know, he's throwing his coach under the bus. It's the same thing with Kyrie. It's exactly the same thing.
I just don't. I don't get what he. So the team's not playing well. He's been. He fluctuates on his attitude towards the team constantly. You know, it doesn't matter until the playoffs, and then it's the. I don't like the spotlight, and it's this and that. Sometimes with athletes, and it's the same thing with Antonio Brown. Like, what do you want? Antonio Brown's making as much money as he's ever going to make. He gets the ball consistently. He leads the league or is close to leading the league in several receiving categories.
He's universally seen as a top three receiver on the planet.
He has a player's coach. He has a team with a passionate fan base, and he's certainly able to market himself. He was on the dumb "Look at Me, I'm Singing" show.
Massive. He's done Dancing with the Stars.
Like, what does he want? Like, sometimes I don't understand what these guys want. So if Kyrie Irving goes to New York or something, what's going to change? I mean, he'll be in a worse team. Would he get to play with, like, his friend?
There's that. There's also, he knows he's not enjoying it in Boston, so, well, let's start over again. Let's try something new. Like, there was a honeymoon period in Boston. He'll at least get that with New York. But if he thinks he's going to, you know, avoid the scrutiny and the criticism, he's insane. It's going to be worse in New York than it is here.
Yeah, and yeah. New York's a place where the owner is hated. Basically, the franchise is hated. They're a butt of jokes on sitcoms and movies.
And now, expectations, you want to talk about expectations here? Kyrie Irving goes to New York, and he gets anybody to go with him. The expectations will be through the roof by that fan base. You kidding me? They'll expect them to go to the playoffs immediately and go deep into the playoffs.
Yeah.
If they don't live up to those expectations, which, by the way, won't be as high as the expectations he's already got here, it's going to be even worse there.
Yeah, but the expectations here are justified in that without him, they went to the Eastern Conference Finals. And before that, with a player of lesser ability, when they had Isaiah Thomas, they had success.
Went to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah.
Same
and
place.
So, right, exactly. And so, again, you, if you look at it just in terms of you're bringing in a top 20 player, whatever you want to call him. I mean, he is failing. I mean, this team is failing when they've had more success without him. I mean, you're going to put him and Isaiah Thomas in the same conversation? Isaiah Thomas was in a situation where there were role players, including Horford, that were not afraid to give up the ball. Now Kyrie Irving has to adjust to young players that have skill. And he has a lot of trouble doing that. I just, with him, it's very confusing to me. You got to make your move. You got to be the guy. You got to be on a team that's won, been to Eastern Conference Finals. You got a coach everyone thinks is the greatest thing ever. Now, we'll see how he works with stars, but you have a guy who's the coach who seems like he's the greatest thing ever. You're on ESPN every night. Like, what do you want? I mean, you want to win. They're nice to him.
No, so what he wants is, again, so I already said one thing I think he wants, which is he doesn't want any negative coverage. I also think he includes himself with LeBron. I think he thinks he's that kind of player. And I think he thinks he has that kind of resume or wants to, like, you know, jump to that level. And he's not there. And I think he's frustrated when he doesn't get the benefit of the doubt or doesn't get the same sort of, you know, reverence that a player like LeBron James would get. I think there's some of that, too.
Well, then,
like,
he's completely delusional.
Well, correct. He is. Of course he is. But I think that's part of the issue. He wants to be considered with the greatest of the greats, maybe all time, and certainly in the game currently. And as good as he is, you called him top 20-ish. That's probably, I would say, maybe a little low on my personal rankings. But yeah, sure. Maybe, you know, top 10-ish, top 12-ish, somewhere in there. That doesn't mean you're LeBron James all of a sudden. So you're not going to get the same coverage. I think he wants that. I think he absolutely wants that.
It's a shame that they won by so much last night because Gorman was starting to get on him.
Yeah. Yeah, what did he say the other day? They can't even locate the switch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so now Gorman's going to be like, ah. You know, they're pretty good. Stevens and Kyrie had a nice conversation on the airplane.
Long plane ride. He was probably there on the plane ride. What were the peanuts like? How was the flat soda?
Well, you think they have flat sodas on there? Well, want to ask anyone, ask John.
What movie did you watch?
I can tell you that the soda is not flat. Bubbles in the soda.
Have you ever seen any gambling hijinks go wrong?
Oh, yeah.
Go wrong? No, I have not seen that.
What was the Gilbert Arenas game that they played?
It was called Who's Bringing a Gun?
That's right. Who's Bringing a Gun onto the Plane is what that is.
Yeah. It's always a fun one.
Yeah.
I'm John Wallach on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Okay. All right. When we come back, you know, the Bruins beat the Hurricanes last night. And the Hurricanes, very controversial when it comes to City Hall in the Carolinas, and we will have that for you.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.